comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth, thank you for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, that is a guarantee, and it is the show where you matter. Well, America's Northeast is in the grips of a blizzard that you have to say is one for the headlines. In fact, a whole lot of the USA is in the midst of record winter storms. As a matter of fact, cold weather is in the headlines and is of headline proportions all over the world. Do you know where Tasmania is? Well, Tasmania is just south of Australia. In fact, we've got a listening audience there in Tasmania. And well, I got a little echo over here. Well, Tasmania is being on the other side of the world and also being in the southern hemisphere is in summertime right now. And it snowed today. So, to all of the groupies of the inconvenient truth, how's that global warming thing working out for you? On this show, we discuss all things strange and unexplained, whether it's cryptids like Bigfoot, ghosts, remote viewing, UFOs, extraterrestrials. We talk about it all. And yet there is one type of paranormal phenomena we have never discussed. Now tonight we're going to remedy that situation. Tonight we're going to examine a type of paranormal phenomena that most of the shows in our genre never touch. The topic tonight and our guest tonight portend a lively and compelling couple of hours here at the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Kevin Cook, and he has written a book in which he says, you know what? Those apparitions of Mary that people say they've seen, those apparitions of Mary are real. So we're going to dive into that. We're going to see what he's got to share with us about the apparitions of Mary. I think most of us, when we think about apparitions of Mary, we think in terms of, well, it's all, you know, just sort of theologically induced imagination. But is it? According to my guest tonight, it's not that at all. According to my guest tonight, these apparitions are real. Some of you may find it difficult to wrap your minds around it. I may find it difficult to wrap my mind around it. But we'll find out together on the other side of this break.
Come on.
welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Quick announcement or two before we bring our guest on and introduce him to you. For those who are watching our television channel, for reasons unknown, software for the past two or three shows has been acting up right at the beginning of the show. I don't know why. So we'll see what we can do about that and get it straightened out. But as they used to say on the Outer Limits, there is nothing wrong with your TV set. it's us. So we'll see what we can do about that. Well, as I said at the top of the show, my guest has written a book in which he says that apparitions of Mary, some people would say Mother Mary, some people would say the Holy Mother, some people would say the Virgin Mary. We know what we're talking about, right? So he says that these apparitions are actually real and not imagined, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. It is a phenomena that whether some people would call it supernatural, some people would say it doesn't exist, and everything in between. But certainly it qualifies as paranormal. It's not something that happens every morning when you get up. It's something outside of our normal experience, and it's something that we have not previously dealt with on this show. In 10 years of doing this show, this is a part of the paranormal that I have never delved into. And I guess primarily because I didn't have a guest who had written a book about it. Kevin Cook is my guest, and Kevin, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Kevin, we cannot hear you. Are you there?
Can you hear me now?
No, we cannot. I can hear you, but you're all broken up. And are you speaking just through a telephone?
Yeah, it's just a landline.
There you go. Now we're hearing you.
Oh, okay. I moved the little handset around on the desk. Maybe that helped it somehow.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it was just very staticky and broken up. But we hear you now. Kevin, tell us a little bit about Kevin Cook before we dive into this. Who is Kevin Cook?
Well, I'm mostly a long-term salesman. I used to be a Protestant minister in my youth, my 20s. And for the most part, though, I've been a salesman most of my life. And I did get exposed to some issues that your show deals with early on. In other words, to more or less lead me towards being interested in the paranormal. I grew up in the South. Go ahead.
I didn't say anything. I'm listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess it was a little static I heard here. I've never had trouble in this line before. Anyhow, Kevin, I grew up in South Florida, and my father was a big engineer down there. And back in the late 60s, you remember the Bermuda Triangle and Charles Berlitz's book?
Sure.
Well, I read that when I was, a teenager. And also, about that same interval, there was The Ghost of Flight 401 that was a movie with Ernest Borgnine.
Mm-hmm.
And, I asked my father, I said, Dad, is there any validity to this, or is this just silliness? And he said, I know you expect me to, dismiss this, but in actuality, there is something to it. What he did as a volunteer basis is he was head of the Coast Guard's Power Squadron, which hired boating course instructors for all of South Florida on a volunteer basis. And in doing that, he hobnobbed with a lot of admirals and Coast Guard officials. And basically, they indicated that 10% of the phenomena, UFOs, disappearances, all this kind of thing that happened in the Bermuda Triangle was true. That there was no real logical basis of explanation.
Mm-hmm.
People would, the Coast Guard cutters would come up on a boat. There'd be a cigarette burning in an ashtray, and anyone that smoked in their life would know that it takes 10 minutes to burn a cigarette out, and no longer. And there'd be no evidence of where these people went, period. And so what I'm saying is that was one little input early on, and then the he knew people, just as it turns out, were our neighbors in Fort Lauderdale that were Eastern Airlines pilots and had actually seen the ghost of Ernest, you know, that Ernest Borgnine played in the movie. And so I guess from an early stage, I got interested in these kind of things. And
okay, now let me ask you, have you ever personally seen a UFO or a ghost or anything like that?
I have seen a ghost, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've experienced some other abnormal phenomena as far as personal insights and kind of prophetic kind of insights. Not all pedestrian, but I also experienced at an early age, I don't know if you're a baseball fan or not, but you remember Carly Ostrzemski used to play for the Red Sox?
Sure.
Well, when I was in junior high school, I told a buddy of mine, it was May, before we got out for the school year, and I said, you know, Bob, the Red Sox are going to win the pennant this year, and Carly Ostrzemski is going to win the Triple Crown. And the chances of that actually occurring are one in a billion. I asked people at Vegas what the chances are of that bet that worked in an exacta, what chances are that that would actually turn out. And they said one bet pending on the other, the odds would go up to about one in a billion. And I could have owned billions if I'd gotten my father to bet on that bet. But this came out, and I just said it automatically without any forethought. And I was just a kid, you know, 10, 11-year-old kid or something. There's no way I could have known that. The Red Sox manager wouldn't have thought they'd win. So all I'm saying is those experiences also connected up with my, at least my interest in the paranormal as a preface.
All right. Now, you've written a book, Kevin, in which you make the case that apparitions of Mary are real.
Yes.
As opposed to imagined.
Right.
And for some people, that is not a leap at all because they are believers. They already believe that Mary does appear, and they accept that just like they would accept if you said snow is cold.
Sure.
Okay. Now, for others, apparitions of Mary are, they view it as just the invention of the Roman Catholic Church.
To promote itself.
Mm-hmm. And then for some, apparitions don't happen. Apparitions of Mary or anybody else, it just doesn't happen. And there's everything in between.
Right.
So let's begin with a couple of the more famous sightings of Mary in history that people might be familiar with, the story.
Well, I guess at first, I think most people are familiar with Fatima in 1917 Portugal,
mm-hmm.
Where, you know, three children saw an image of the Virgin Mary. And let me just say also, Kevin, relative to people that resist this, you know, of course I am a Catholic, sure. But what I'm saying is I'm not necessarily just promoting Catholicism here. Matter of fact, a lot of Mary's messages have been ecumenical in their content as far as that she's not just for Catholics and so forth. But I guess in the book that I've stressed is that the physical evidence and photos and cures and, in other words, all the mounting evidence that would, you know, be add authenticity to this phenomena. But back to Fatima, along those lines, the Virgin Mary appeared to these three children, and she gave them information as far as coming world events that these children could have never known. For example, they were told about Russia and its errors, referring to communism and so forth. And they were told that there would be there was a war going on. Of course, the World War I was going on at that time. But she told the kids there'd be another war that'd be far greater and more devastating. And these were just poor little Portuguese peasant children. They didn't know the geography of the world. They may have heard of Russia, but that's about as far as it would go. They certainly wouldn't know anything about communism. And they, of course, would have no idea, as anybody else would, that World War II was going to develop. So in other words, this in itself was so momentous. And by the way, these things were all noted down when they were said. You know, it was, mm-hmm. In other words, wasn't just loosey-goosey. So that occurred. And also, relative to the Fatima circumstances, when they had a culminating apparition, when Mary was going to show the dance of the sun and show the crowd a miracle, basically, is what was foretold. And that happened in October in 1917. The crowd was 70 to 100,000 people were assembled. And a lot of those people were antagonistic towards the church and were trying to debunk the experience. And, Kevin, there wasn't one example of one report of all the people that were sent to debunk that experience that didn't corroborate it. In other words, the exact opposite happened. You had conversions. I mean, this was real stuff here. And, you know, in 1917, these people weren't ignorant peasants. They were as educated as we are, you know. So.
All right, let me do this. Your book claims that these Marian apparitions are real.
Right.
So what do you, let's define real. What do you mean by real?
Real by being, I personally believe it is an actual representation of the Virgin Mary, an actual visit. I don't think it's a UFO. I don't think it's a demonic entity that's trying to mislead people. I think it, in other words, basically, I look at it in the classical sense that it is what it is. And Kevin, it's been the most authenticated and well-reported phenomenon in the entire paranormal field.
Okay, well, let's talk about some of that evidence.
Okay.
Okay, now first, let me ask you this. Right. You mentioned that when you were younger, you were a Protestant minister.
That's correct.
And then you told us that today you're a Catholic. Is that, was that transition as a result of this research into the apparitions of Mary?
Well, it was connected to it, but here's what happened. It was a very interesting experience. About 6 years ago now, I converted to Catholicism, and it's not an instant process. You know, it takes about a year to attend classes at the church, to join the church. And in September of 2008, I'd been a Catholic for a couple of years, and I made a trip up to upstate New York to look at some property. I have an upstate New York fascination, and I just make that trip, and I want to see Cooperstown Baseball Museum. And in other words, nothing religious was associated with the trip, at least initially. But a couple days before I flew out, I was staying in Fultonville, New York, which is about 40 miles westbound of Albany on Highway 90. And I'd set aside the day before I flew out to just be a tourist and take photos and so forth in the Mohawk Valley, and I ran across Our Lady of Martyrs Shrine in Orriesville, New York. Fultonville, Orriesville, New York, same thing. And I was there, Kevin, about an hour and a half, and for the first 45 minutes, I promise you, I smelt the most overpowering, knock-you-down smell of roses. I mean, I have bad allergies. I'm not a bloodhound as far as my olfactory senses go. And I promise you, Kevin, it was just phenomenal. And I what happened was I finally went into the museum up there, and I asked them, I said, "Lady, I sell trees for a living. What have you got here that's so fragrant?" And she looked at me in a shocked manner and said, "You smelled it too?" And I said, "Well, I guess I did." Because, Kevin, what I'm trying to emphasize is this was something that flooded the senses. This wasn't just a smell of, you know, a mild wisp of roses or something like this. Was like you were engulfed a room of roses, and the setting was such that you were not enclosed in any way. It was like a plateau that was about 40 acres plateau that was on top of a mesa, and a form of mesa. I mean, it was windy, and it's the foothills of the Adirondack Mountains. You're up in out of the way places, and also there were no church services going on. There was no incense, nothing. It was just.
And what about rose bushes?
No. 20 acres away, there was about a handful of roses that were near a statue of the Virgin Mary. But if you had a bloodhound, I doubt he could smell them from that far away, a genuine bloodhound. In any case, Carol said that the lady, the curator, said that every now and then someone did experience this phenomenon up there in her 12 years of experience. And it was powerful enough that it got me to thinking. I mean, I'm... You know, just old salesman. I'm not easily rocked by things, and Well, I mean, I was so overcome, Kevin, I sat down for 45 minutes after the initial 45 just trying to recover like I'd been blackjacked because I knew I'd really experienced something unusual there. And it was very pleasant, but certainly awe-inspiring. And that kind of was a push towards Marian apparitions because, see, that same phenomena, the odor of sanctity, it's called, is associated with a lot of Marian apparitions. And I guess one thing kind of led into another. And I'd already had, even years ago when I was a Protestant minister, I investigated weeping statues up in Wilmington, Delaware area. And I mean, I've always been interested in Marian phenomena, but I guess the link between the odor of sanctity in my experience and the commonality of it with Marian apparitions kind of got me to thinking along those lines. So that's how the book developed, basically.
Okay. But, because I think it's important for the listeners to know if your personal beliefs and theology are sort of, if it influences the conclusions that you've drawn,
right,
or the research and the conclusions you drew, if that influenced your theology.
Well, basically it did, Kevin, because even though I was interested in Marian apparitions, I still, you know, had open mind as far as their validity, but the more I researched, the more I found out it is a profoundly well-authenticated experience. I mean, it's as real as a can of tuna fish. It really is.
All right. Well, a can of tuna fish certainly is odoriferous, but quite different from the smell of roses.
I mean, maybe that's a pedestrian example, but it's as real as real gets.
Okay, so
I found out something most Catholics don't know is the odor of sanctity experience, which has been associated with a lot of saints and so forth, is a lot more widespread than most Catholics realize it is.
All right. Now you said this is profoundly.
You
said that the reality of the Marian apparitions is one of the most profoundly corroborated phenomena out there. So let's talk about that. What evidence have you found? What actual evidence?
Okay.
Have you found that has led you to think that they are real?
Okay. One thing that would first come to mind is you've probably seen the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe on the back of trucks. You know, a lot of Latin people will frequently have it on the back of their trucks. I can't really describe it too well over the phone. You just have to see it. But
yeah.
It's an image of the Virgin Mary that, like I say, is frequently put on vehicles. And that is a representation of an apparition that occurred in 1531. It's called Our Lady of Guadalupe. Now, that happened at a very pivotal time, but we'll worry about that later. But
all right. We've got to step away for a break. We'll pick up with Our Lady of Guadalupe when we come back. Don't go away, folks. More on the other side. I'm speaking with Kevin Cook this evening, and Kevin, you were just about to tell us about Our Lady of Guadalupe.
Yes, sir. The setting was 1531, and what happened was Our Lady of, Virgin Mary appeared to an Indian named Juan Diego, and this was on the Tepeyac Hill. It's the current site of modern Mexico City, and she appeared to this Indian, who was a Catholic, and she indicated that she wanted him to go to the local bishop in Mexico's, or in the, well, not Mexico City, but the local establishment there, and ask him to have a chapel built in that area. So the Indian did. He went to the bishop, and, you know, he was basically patted on the head, and the bishop said, well, bring me back some evidence that you really saw the Virgin Mary, and we'll talk. You know, basically shoot him away. And he went back and told the Virgin Mary this, and what she did is he was wearing a cactus, kind of a cape garment. It's a cape is the best way I could describe it, but it was a cactus husk garment called a tilma, T-I-L-M-A. And it, very fragile, as you can imagine cactus husk would be. And she, remember, this was December of 1531, and Mexico City is fairly high elevation. It was fairly cold there. There were no roses growing at that time. And she actually presented a bunch of Castilian roses and put them in this Juan Diego's cloak and told him to take them to the bishop and show him. Well, as it turned out, the bishop was from Castile in Spain, and he recognized those roses being native to his area. And also, any flowers would have been miraculous at that particular time. And not only that, but what I'm getting at, Kevin, is when he opened up the garment to present the roses to the bishop, on the back of the garment was the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe that you'll frequently see, imprinted on this cactus husk garment. Now, Kevin, that's been in constant church custody since 1531, and it's currently on display at Our Lady of, the Basilica of Guadalupe in Mexico City. It's been there for the whole 500-year period. It's only been under glass and protected for the last 150, 160 years. And consequently, it's been exposed to, you know, heat, cold, moisture, smoke, various things. Kevin, it has deteriorated. If you and I put bunch of cactus husks in a closet 20 years later, it would be just crumbly into dust. This is still in pristine condition. You could see it today if you were down there. And I know I was lucky to come across some people who were neighbors of Sandia Labs engineers who, on their own time, examined specimens from this garment. And, Kevin, they found no evidence of tracing or pigment. Now, you can't have a painting, really, without tracing, and you certainly would need pigment. There's no explanation for real how that image is got on this cactus husk garment. I know you've probably heard of the Shroud of Turin.
Sure.
This has been much more studied and more accessible than the Shroud of Turin. I'm not making any of this up. It's all very verifiable, and it gets much more exotic than that.
All right, well, let me play the skeptic's advocate for just a moment.
Sure.
In this story of that you've just related to us of Our Lady of Guadalupe, why wouldn't Mary just appear to the bishop and say, I want you to build a chapel over here?
I know what you're saying, but I don't know. I mean, you're saying, no, why would she not, if you and I were doing it, we'd see the head man around here say, get this done, and that'd be it. I know. I cannot speak for it. I cannot. I think there is a possibility, though, that she used Juan Diego as a vehicle because, see, there's more to the story. Just like in the Marian apparitions, there's pivotal timing. Maybe Juan Diego's input into it was pivotal as well, because you have to understand the background. At the time, the Spanish were treating the Indians like cattle. I mean, like not subhumans, cattle, period, brutalizing them in every way. Juan Diego, being a convert to Catholicism and as an agent for the Virgin Mary's mission, gave the Indians more status than they would have otherwise had. And that did make a difference in the subsequent Christianization of what amounts to current day 600 million Catholics in South America and Mexico. So that's a very good reason why the Virgin Mary used Juan Diego.
Okay. Do we have any evidence from a more modern time?
Oh, yeah. We certainly do. But let me finish a little bit about this tilma before as far as the evidence part.
All right.
I don't mean to monopolize the conversation, but, I mean, there's one little pivotal piece of evidence. Okay, now you've got the image that hasn't deteriorated, but also one step further, in the Virgin Mary's eyes in the image, there's a thing called the Samson-Purkinje effect. Now, you and I have eyes that, are, the eyes distort the image that's in front of us because they're curved lenses. That's called the Samson-Purkinje effect. And 20 different ophthalmologists have examined the Virgin Mary's eye, and it shows that same effect that would be replicated in a human's eye. What I'm saying is, in short, Kevin, there's no way a human artist could depict that very exacting effect. It's never been found in any other paintings. And the scene that's replicated in her eyes were Juan Diego and the presenting the roses to the bishop. I'm just saying that's a little icing on the cake of the evidence I've got that no one defeat. I mean, if I was a defense attorney somewhere, I'd win every time in a court versus skeptics on this. But at any rate, I just wanted to stress how truly exotic this artifact is. At any rate, I'm sorry.
Okay, let's move into a little bit more modern time. And do we have any apparitions that happened at least during the time of the photographic cameras? Have some evidence that they are real.
Absolutely the best. And actually, Kevin, it's one that most Catholics don't even know about, and that's the apparition at Zeitoun, Zeitoun, Egypt, which is basically just a suburb of Cairo. And this occurred predominantly between 1968 and 1970, and then it even occurred last fall in 2009 in Cairo as well. What happened was the Virgin Mary was seen over St. Mary's Coptic Church in Zeitoun, Egypt, over this two-year period. She was on Arab television, with witnesses ranging between 2 to 10 million people. Actual photos of her. I have them in the book, in the middle of the book, in the photographic section. This is the grandest of all apparitions. You had Roman observers from the Vatican. The Coptic Church approved it. I mean, this was the granddaddy of all apparitions. And like I say, most Catholics don't even recognize this as an apparition because it was handled by the Egyptian Coptic Church, which was basically an Eastern Orthodox version of Catholicism.
Okay, and when was the last time this one happened?
Last fall.
Last fall.
The fall of 2009.
And it was on Arab television?
Yes.
What were they saying about it, do you know?
Well, if you look at the backdrop of the setting at the time, and especially in 68 through 70, this was Nasser was president of Egypt, basically the dictator of Egypt. And while not a strong Muslim, say, he was still antagonistic towards Christianity because it represented Western ideas and so forth. And he had every reason to debunk the apparition. As a matter of fact, he sent Egyptian special forces teams 1 mile square around the church, block to block and door to door, to try to see if these images were some kind of holographic projections. And they went to every length, in other words, to debunk the apparition. Couldn't do it. At the end, even Nasser, the president, verified the validity of these apparitions. How about that?
Was there any message that this apparition of Mary gave to anyone?
Now, this was a silent image. There have been silent apparitions, and this was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But remember I said about the pivotal timing that's associated with a lot of these apparitions? This is this happened right after the Arab-Israeli War of 67,
mm-hmm.
and there's the anticipation that this occurred to kind of quiet the populace down, because this is an event that affected everybody's mentality in Egypt and completely occupied their attentions. Like I say, it was on TV almost nightly for a two-year period. The Coptic Church approved it. Like I say, even Nasser, the president, and the Egyptian government approved, actually said that it was a valid experience. And understand that they had every reason to debunk it because they're not, you know.
And they got this on film, right?
They do. And I extracted one of the photos from that film that's in my book that shows the Virgin Mary in clear terms over the Coptic Church, yeah.
Well, quite obviously, it's not a hallucination, because cameras don't record people's hallucinations.
No, and there were millions of people that saw this. They'd have as many as 250,000 people at one time that were witnesses to this event in the square in front of the church.
There is a picture that I think a lot of people have seen. of what is alleged to be an apparition of Mary in front of the Roman Colosseum.
Now, that I haven't seen.
And that one, you know, just the nature of the photograph kind of looks like it wasn't last week. Looks like it was on actual film. It's a little grainy.
Right.
And the problem with that one is we can see there's something there.
Right.
But the problem is we can't see what it looks like. I mean, we can't tell if that looks like Mary or if it's just kind of a fog.
Well, people are so apparition-oriented that what they'll frequently do is they'll... do what's called matrixing. The mind, like, you know, like there's the burnt piece of toast where they say they see an image of the Virgin Mary in the toast. And the mind does that. It tries to make shapes of things to make sense of them, like looking at a cloud and it looks like a ship or a horse or whatever. And that's just something the mind does. But the apparitions that were seen over St. Mary's Coptic Church in Cairo, and I've got a copy of in the book, are pretty distinct.
Mm-hmm.
And they follow the same patterns. They're even interactive. I mean, it wasn't a hologram because I wouldn't see you having an interactive hologram.
And what do you mean it was interactive?
It was interactive because she would acknowledge people's cheers out to her with waves and bows and stuff like that. I mean, in other words, it wasn't just an image that was like up against a wall. This was one that would actually interact to a certain extent with the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right, now let me throw this in.
Okay.
The Roman Catholic Church and the what people refer to as the Orthodox Church,
right,
are basically theologically the same.
They are
when it comes to ecclesiology, when it comes to the structure of church government, that's where they're different. They don't recognize a pope.
Right.
And they have a different setup for government inside the church.
Yeah.
But their theology is basically the same. And that means high regard for Mary, praying to Mary, praying to the saints. The same as in the Catholic Church. Now, I have a question on the other side of this break. We have to step away for a moment. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Kevin Cook tonight. He is the author of book Marian Apparitions Are Real. And I was making a point when we went to break, Kevin, that this apparition has appeared to people who are Catholic. This apparition has appeared to the people who are Orthodox. And the two groups are theologically closer than first cousins.
Right.
Could the theological belief be playing a role in why the apparition is appearing, or has the apparition of Mary appeared to people who are not Catholic, not Orthodox, maybe not anything?
Well, I would say definitely the apparition we just talked of as far as Zaytun in Egypt, that she appeared to people that mostly, predominantly, were Muslim.
Yeah, but appeared above an Orthodox church.
That's true. Obviously, yes. That's true.
What about just a bunch of Bedouins out in the desert?
Essentially, she's appeared to Catholics and Orthodox. That's true. That's true.
So what role, if any, would you think theology would have in that? I mean, would theology be, theology being the belief system, would that have some sort of empowering role to play in where and how the apparition can appear?
Well, in other words, I don't think the belief system controls the apparition, because I think that's an external influence. I think it basically corroborates a Catholic form of theology. However, in different apparitions, Mary has said that she's not here just for Catholics. I mean, that's the message she's relayed to the seers, who are basically the witnesses and the people that interface with her. So I guess she's appeared to a friendly audience, or at least a potentially receptive audience. Beyond that, I can't speak to her. I'm just looking at it. See, I'm trying to separate my Catholicism from the phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that possible, though?
With that. And
is it actually possible to do that, though?
Yes, it is. Because I think it is, because I was interested in the phenomena before I became a Catholic. I mean, and I'm willing to look at it. And there's been other, Episcopalians, there's been other Episcopalian Marian scholars, too. But, of course, here, an argument could be made that that's close to Catholicism itself, but...
Well, and originally it was Catholicism, and Henry VIII wanted a divorce and couldn't get one, and declared that the Protestant movement is on in England.
Well, I know. And, well, so you could say they're cousins, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But see, in for example, in John. Like I said, I'm not trying to, be too much of a jingoist here, but in John chapter 19, Jesus speaks as Mary as the mother of his disciples as well as his own. And, Protestants that want to beat the Bible over the head 100 times would have to read that with some understanding that he's not just, throwing words around. He has real meaning that she has a role and a maternal role to humanity. And a fair reading of that scripture would lend one to that belief.
Well, it would for those predisposed to believe that scripture has validity.
Well, yes. Well, sure. I mean, I agree. But I'm just saying, if we want to approach it from a Protestant standpoint, that would, if you were truly an open-minded Protestant, you'd have to read that and say, Jesus said she's our mother. Well, what did this entail? And I'm not personally threatened by her having a maternal role, or what I view as a messenger form of role. They've used angels and dreams and everything else to provide messages before. Her doing it doesn't particularly rattle me.
I don't know really how to class. Look, it is paranormal,
right?
But then I don't know how to classify it beyond that, because if you're dealing with angels,
right,
you're dealing with something that is extraterrestrial.
Certainly,
angels not from here. If you're dealing with ghosts, then you're dealing with spirits that once were living, breathing, walking, flesh and blood humans.
Yes, sir.
When you're dealing with Mary, you are dealing with someone who was a living, breathing, flesh and blood human.
Right.
And so from that perspective, a ghost. But no other ghost seemed to make these spectacular appearances like that.
No. No, that's true. But then no other ghost has been acclaimed as being our mother either. I mean, like I said, the scripture from John just indicated. I mean, no other ghost has been given that kind of, position, if you will.
I think it's important, too. I read up on this today. I'm somewhat familiar with Catholic theology and very familiar with Orthodox theology.
Yeah.
When I say somewhat familiar, I'm with the theology... I'm familiar with both. But within the Catholic Church, there have been certain rulings, or and they have different names, but for the sake of the secular among the audience, it's like executive orders. And when it comes to these apparitions of Mary, it's not the position of the church, even though there are some of them that they have said, yep, that's real. They haven't said that to all of them.
No, they haven't.
And they don't say that anybody, including Catholics, needs to believe in them.
No, it's not a necessity at all to believe in them. Nowhere at all does it say that, you know, you can't be a Catholic unless you believe in this. No, I'm just saying it's an adjunct, a phenomenon that I've investigated that definitely does corroborate classical Catholicism, but you don't have to believe it to be a Catholic, no.
Well, the reason I bring it up, for one thing, people that aren't familiar with that need to know that, but also it would seem that to the officialdom within the Catholic Church, that the Marian apparitions are not that important.
No, that's true. That's true. They're not. It's a side issue to them. I agree with that. However, it's not without importance. It's just not the central figure. I mean, the central feature. The central feature is being Christian, believing in Christ, and all that goes along with Christianity. That's the central factor. I agree.
All right. So what benefit has accrued to humanity from these apparitions?
Well, I think that Mary has acted as a messenger of God to show that God is... She's acted to warn the populace. She's tried to encourage them for renewed faith. She's come at pivotal times to warn people that they had faith in God, they'll persevere through their problems. Basically, she's authenticating the existence and concern of God. That's, I think, what her role has been. And she's been a sympathetic figure that they can look to without being scared, as such. If the Archangel Michael showed up, it might terrify half the populace. But I'm saying that's been her message. It's been a positive one, that God's reaching out to us via her, and as a messenger of him, and I think it's a positive, reassuring message. I think that's the whole point, which is a good point.
All right. I want to go back to this idea of Mary appearing primarily to Roman Catholics, or primarily to people Orthodox. Who are Orthodox.
Right.
You said that you're not aware of Mary appearing to someone who's just, there's no connection at all with Catholicism.
Well, there was one example historically around the 1840s. She appeared to a fellow who was actually very antagonistic towards Catholicism, a fellow named Ratisbonne. He was an aristocratic Jewish guy in France. And she actually appeared to him, and that appearance caused Ratisbonne was so life-changing experience that he actually became a Catholic and even became a priest. So, yes, she did appear to a non-Catholic or non-Orthodox type, yes. And he was a very well-known figure in France, and his conversion was quite caused a big social stir at the time, but he definitely was a non-Christian type, yes. That's an example of one.
Now, we're headed into break. When we come back, I want to say something about religion and various countries. We'll be back, folks, right after this. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And if you're joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. My guest this evening, Kevin Cook. And Kevin is the author of a book called Marian Apparitions Are Real, in which he makes the case that apparitions of the Mother Mary, or some people would say the Holy Mother, the Holy Virgin, whatever, you know there are many names for that, but these apparitions, according to Kevin, are real. And he's been talking about why he thinks that's the case. And I've got a question I want to ask, and then we'll open up the telephone lines. Let me say this, folks. The equipment has gone haywire. Remember in the, I think it was the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey? Remember the computer HAL? How the computer takes over and just does what he wants to do, remember? Well, that's kind of how the equipment is doing here tonight. And it's doing weird stuff, and all through the break I was pushing buttons and trying to get things back on track. But we will plunge forward. Now, Kevin, I've got this question about religion and countries, because you mentioned France.
Okay.
All right. Here in the United States, people think about religion through lenses of freedom. You choose either to be a Christian or not be a Christian. You choose to be a Muslim or not be a Muslim. You choose to be a Buddhist or not a Buddhist. And then within each of those, there are denominations. So you choose, if you choose to be a Christian, you make a choice, like you've been talking about, to be a Catholic, or to be a Methodist, or to be a Pentecostal. You make the choice. But I've lived in a lot of countries, and I know that in many, if not most of those countries, you're born into the religion.
Right.
For instance, in the case of, everybody knows I spent a long time in the former Yugoslavia. I spent a number of years there. Now, in the former Yugoslavia, if you are ethnically a Serb, that's equivalent to saying you are Orthodox.
Yeah.
And if you are ethnically Croatian,
or Catholic,
that's equivalent to saying you are Catholic. If you're ethnically Bosniak, that's equivalent to saying you're a Muslim. You're born into this religion. That being the case, I want to reopen the question of the role of belief in this. Because I sort of made the case earlier, I sort of insinuated earlier, on purpose, that belief may be the empowering mechanism that's causing this to happen. And now I'm going to insinuate the opposite, because I've met Serbs who don't believe anything the Orthodox Church teaches, but if you ask them, they'll tell you they're Orthodox. It's the same thing. Well, I'm Serb. I'm Orthodox. It's the same thing. Same thing with Croatians and Catholicism. Same thing with Bosnians and Islam. So let's talk about that for a moment. I mean, France, if you're French, there's some better than 90% chance you are Catholic.
That's true.
So what role, if any, does belief play as an empowering mechanism? And if it plays no role as an empowering mechanism to cause this apparition to happen, then why are all of these apparitions, most of them, better than 90%, happening with Catholics and Orthodox?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to speak to, you know, heaven's motives and everything else, you know. But I don't feel that this is any more caused, the belief system any more causes these apparitional events to occur than UFOs are caused, because I believe in UFOs. I think I see something because I see it. I don't think that I'm predisposed to looking for UFOs. I mean, I'm just using that as an example. And I did, as we started our discussion, I have seen a ghost, but I wasn't looking to see that ghost. And
Did you have a predisposition that they exist?
I had a predisposition they exist, but I never thought I'd see one in my apartment.
Okay.
And I saw it simultaneously with my business partner. He and I both saw it and were pretty well whacked out by the experience. But certainly that came up unannounced or unexpected. And all the belief systems you'd ever want to stack up and roll together didn't cause us to see that ghost. We saw it because we saw it. And if we were going to see it, we'd probably think we'd see it in some cemetery or some, you know, exotic circumstance, not in some old apartment. So, and I think that applies to this, too. I think it happens because it happens. And as far as why she appears to the predominantly Catholic or Orthodox peoples, I don't know. But like I say, she has appeared to other people, too. Was the Ratisbon experience and also the Zaytun experience were the predominant population was not Christian. So I don't think mankind has that active a role in their belief system making them see these things, no. I think
fair
it's
enough.
What it is.
Fair enough. Well, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think about it? What, you know, I know there's, when I say what do you think about it, I don't want to know what do you think theologically about it. Okay, theology is one thing, the phenomena is something else. The phenomena apparently happens, there are pictures of it, and as our guest has told us, it was on Arabic television.
Also, Kevin, it's been going on since 40 AD.
Okay, all right, so it's got a long history. So, you know, the phenomena is one thing, what you believe about it is something else. But what do you think about it? Do you think that it's real? Do you think that it is it possibly really Mary, or is it something else? And do you think, if it is real, do you think there is some mechanism or reason why these apparitions seem to happen primarily, predominantly, with Catholic people and Orthodox people? Now, I want to know what you think about that. Plus, you may have some other comment. Maybe you have seen an apparition of Mary. It is paranormal. There's no question about it. The telephone number here in the studio, and it's the phone is open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, or the toll-free number in Canada and the USA is 888-223-4599. Now, we did have someone, two someones that called before we opened the telephone lines, and they didn't make it to the air, but the phones are open now. 623-444-5889 or toll free 888-223-4599. If you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can call the main number, the 623 number. And we would love to hear you, would love to speak to you no matter where you are on the planet. But if you don't want to make the international long-distance call, I don't have a toll-free number that's worldwide. So if you're not in the USA and you're not in Canada, you can use the flash message option on my website. You just go to the website, scroll down. You'll see the link on the right side of the picture about tonight's show. And if you click the picture of my guest, it will take you to his website. All right, you said this first happened in 40 A.D.?
Yes, sir. Also, if they do hit the website, they can order the book from that or else go to a Barnes & Noble store and order it, either one.
Okay, fair enough.
But, yes, it happened in 40 A.D. She appeared to the Apostle James, who was trying to evangelize the Spaniards at the time and kind of having a rough go of it, and it was basically a message of that. See, there frequently there's a name that's a applied to the apparitions, or almost always is. In this case, she was called Our Lady of the Pillar, and that was because she actually presented James a pillar, the little wooden thing that was a replica of, well, it wasn't a replica, but it was like a souvenir of the visit. It's hard to say what the exact motive was, but it's called Our Lady of the Pillar, and she was there to kind of encourage him to not give up his evangelizing efforts. And most of these apparitions do have a pivotal timing, just before war is ready to break out. There was one in the 90s, recent times, in Rwanda, that was just before a bunch of ethnic cleansing and genocide, that she appeared there. And like I say, and Guadalupe, that was the start of the New World. I mean, a lot of these have a lot of impact behind the obvious as to why she showed up, yes. I'm sorry, go ahead.
All right, let's go to the telephone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mike from Austin, Texas.
Hello, Mike.
I just wanted to ask your guest, Kevin, about Garabandal. I think it's probably one of the most important apparitions of recent times, and I just wanted to hear what he has to say about it.
Well, I have to agree with you. Now, there's a reason I didn't include it in the book, and one of the reasons was that the church has not completely got behind Garabandal to authenticate it, and I, of the 23 apparitions I have in the book, I wanted to just deal with the ones I knew were rock-solid apparitions. There's been some redirect that Garabandal was a very valid apparition, but the reason it was not included in being approved was because the Virgin Mary had some things to say about the church that were confronting the church that the hierarchy didn't want to have, let's say, broadcast, if you will, and accentuated, and that. In other words, I'm not knocking Garabandal. The only reason I didn't include it in the book was because of its unapproved status. But I hope that answers the question as best I can.
Well, what I find interesting about Garabandal is that there are things foretold in what the Virgin Mary said that are supposed to happen in our lifetime.
Right.
And looking at the way things are, one would assume we're talking about very, very soon.
Yeah. Well, like I say, it's also possible that some of the warnings she had with the church were some clerical abuse issues and things like that have come up. I mean, that's just been potentially mentioned. I can't swear to it, but I mean, it's been mentioned. And like I say, particularly the only reason I omitted Garabandal from the book was because I just want to deal with apparitions that were approved church apparitions or. For the most part.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thanks for the call, Mike. 623-444-5889. That's the number to call. Enlighten us, Kevin, on this particular apparition.
Garabandal?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she appeared to four Spanish children, and there were quite a few messages that came out of it, and there was even supposed to be a glowing host format where there was actually some supernatural phenomena which frequently are associated with these apparitions.
What do you mean on that? Glowing hosts?
I really can't really say that much about it. Like I say, it's been one that's kind of been in the question mark status, and I just left it there without too much investigation because of the non-approved status of it. And let me say this, Kevin. In the back of the book, there's a chart I got from the International Marian Research Institute, and it dates apparitions that are just chronologically dated from 1900 to the present day, just the last 110 years. Kevin, there's about 300 of them, and it's my opinion that same frequency level of apparitions has occurred throughout the whole period. In other words, of course, with modern record keeping, we have a good track record of keeping track of the last 100 years, but what I'm saying is, there's been hundreds and hundreds, possibly thousands of them, and people don't realize the frequency of them. And the largest percentage of them have had no disposition assigned to them, like a court case or like a criminal case. They haven't come to resolution about what happened. The church has only even approved about 11 apparitions in the whole time that have actually received full church approval. So, actual full church approval. So I'm just saying that, like the caller's question on Garabandel, there's quite a few that fall in a gray status.
All right, back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, you're very... it's hard to hear you.
We can hear you fine. What's your question or comment?
I'm Larry from Illinois.
Hello, Larry.
And you want what I think?
Yeah.
So, well, on Fatima, I've done some research on that, and there's some people that wrote books on that, and I mean, what I think that was more of an ET experience than an apparition of Mary.
Okay, explain to us why.
Well, a lot of the evidence that they came up with from what they have in their book, and they did their basically, they didn't come across to me as somebody to debunk it just to do the research and find out and interview people and go through the documents that they could find of what really happened. And from what they came up with, I mean, not that they're... I mean, if you read everything they wrote, there's a stronger feeling that it's an ET than anything else. That's what I got out of it.
Would you think that is more personal interpretation or hard fact, hard science?
Well, they came up with some hard facts, like what they say... that the children described was a 3.5 foot tall white figure. And in fact, there's been some, from what we see of Mary, she's not 3.5 foot tall. And from what was described by a lot of witnesses, was maybe a ship. I mean, I can't explain all of what happened. I'm just giving you. I've been looking for the book here, but I think I lent it to somebody to read, and I never got it back, so I can't give you, the name. But there's books out there. There's a couple of them I know.
You want me to respond to that? Or?
Yeah, Kevin, go ahead and respond.
Well, see, I got into this with George and Ori on Coast to Coast, and I don't really buy the ET part of it because, first, let's think about it. Just over superficially now. What, I mean, this, understand this has been going on since 40 AD, number one. Now, are the ETs just coming here periodically to try to enforce, bolster Catholicism? I mean, what is their motive in impersonating the Virgin Mary? I mean, that's a little weak on its own.
Well, from what he says in the book, Kevin, that he's not trying to, they weren't trying to impersonate the Virgin Mary. They just came along to give messages. They didn't say they were Catholic. She never said that she was the Virgin Mary. She never really said who she was.
She told the children in clear terms she was the Virgin Mary. I mean,
well, that's not what I read in the book. Sorry.
Well, Sister Lucia just died a couple years ago, and she's said the same thing for the last 70 years.
Well, we only know what the church says. In other words, if the reality is,
hang on.
You're out of hundreds.
All right, both guys, hang on. It is true, Larry, that we do only know the church side of the story. But then again, that's who the witnesses were. And the fact that and I'm not defending the idea that it's the Virgin Mary, but I'm thinking like a cop. If I was a cop, and for those who don't know, I spent my life as a cop. So if I was still a cop, and Larry, you called us to come to your house because there's some problem at your house, and I get there and I find out, now, I don't want to know what your religion is if you have religion, but I find out you are, Baptist. Should that influence at all whether I believe the testimony that you tell me about this problem that you called me out there for? If you're a witness to the problem, you're a witness to the problem. And, you know, if, you know, it is true, I sort of opened up that can of worms that mostly Catholics and Orthodox are the people who have these experiences with this apparition of the Virgin Mary. But if that's who the witnesses are, then that's who the witnesses are. And, you know, you have to listen to what the witnesses say and then compare that against all kinds of things to decide whether you think it's correct or not. But see, you have the same thing. This is one of the problems that we have. Larry, thank you for the call, by the way.
Okay.
This is one of the things that's a real problem when you try to investigate phenomena. And that is everybody brings to the table their belief system.
I understand. But Kevin, just like you were a cop, I was also a 10-year insurance investigator.
Okay.
And I was the assistant life insurance investigator for all of Houston. And I'm used to the investigative method and taking statements mm-hmm. and doing all the things connected with it, just like a policeman. And I don't know about yourself, but my experience is that if it smells like a rose and it looks like a rose, it's a rose.
And, well, until proven otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. And like you're saying, basically, you've got the witnesses. The witnesses say such and such. Well, they're who you got. And what I think it really is, and I don't want to be too tendentious about this, but what I'm trying to say is I think the problem with the approach with the ET thing is, for the most part, people would rather believe in some weird little extraterrestrial. And by the way, I believe there are ETs. Don't misunderstand me. But what I'm trying to say is that what motive do these people have? They're going to come and try to bolster Catholicism? I don't think so. That's ludicrous on its own right. But
well,
also, what it really is people find it easier to believe in ET than they do to believe in God, because they have no courage of their convictions. They just find ET belief more acceptable to them. And I think that's the real reason that people would associate it with the ET phenomenon.
All right, we're going to take a side road here now.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Since this has come up about ETs, or is it really the apparition of Mary, and then based on what you just said, the Vatican has been making statements recently about extraterrestrials and saying it's okay if you believe that extraterrestrials exist, they're just our space brothers. What do you suspect they know that they're not telling us?
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up, but I did talk to Nori on Coast to Coast about that too. And here's the thing about it. The Vatican absolutely believes that there's UFOs. Are you familiar with a fellow who's recently deceased, but he was around the UFO scene for a long time, Monsignor Balducci?
Yes,
I'm
familiar, yes.
Okay, he was basically, even though he was in a retired status, he lived at the Vatican. He was, in essence, the Vatican's point man.
Well, we have to step away from break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Kevin Cook, who is the author of a book called Marian Apparitions Are Real. The telephone number here in the studio is 623-444-5889, toll-free 888-223-4599. And I think we'll get back to that question in just a moment, but I think, Kevin, we've sort of established that the phenomena exists whether a person is a believer or not.
Yeah.
Because lots of folks have seen this apparition of Mary, as you said, in Egypt, who are predominantly Muslim.
Right. As a matter of fact, did you know the Muslims actually venerate the Virgin Mary?
Yes.
I try to stress in the book, Kevin, that I try to not be overly Catholic in my approach because I'm looking at it from a phenomenon standpoint, and I stress the physical evidence, the witness testimony, prophecy. I mean, it's pretty strong stuff. Pretty strong case could be made for the Virgin Mary that the phenomenon is there. And like I was meaning about getting into the ET thing, you're an old policeman, you'd look at motive. And what's the alien's motive? To promote Catholicism? That doesn't hold
water. Well, actually, I don't. Yeah. Throughout my career, which included being investigator, patrolman, investigator, and commander and intelligence officer, throughout my career, I never once asked about motive. I just looked for evidence.
Okay.
And so if the evidence says you did it, you did it.
Okay.
And I don't care why. I used to tell them, when I'd have rookies riding with me, and they'd say, yeah, but what is the motive? And I'd tell them, I don't care what the motive is. Why they did it, they can tell their psychiatrist or tell it to Jesus. I don't care why. I just need to know, did they do it?
Well, I didn't know that. I've never been on that side of it.
I got to tell you, not all cops approach it that way. But that's the way I approached it. And that's the way I approach paranormal phenomena. You know, I people say, well, for what motive? You know, why would the extraterrestrials come here? I don't know. I don't care. I just want to know the evidence. Do they come here?
That is basically the thrust of why I wrote the book the way I did, because I wasn't trying to force Catholicism down people's throats, as it were, but I was trying to look at it in and of itself. And even though I am a Catholic, sure. But the issue is, as a phenomenon, this is not unparalleled in the amount and depth and richness of the evidence from various different categories, not just the physical, but the prophecy parts, the part about the kids at Fatima knowing about aspects of Russian communism. I mean, how could these kids know that? They don't even know where Russia was on the map if you stuck it in front of them. So, I mean, these are some things that are very hard to explain and dismiss, really.
All right, let's go back to you were telling us about Monsignor Balducci.
Yes. The way the Vatican seems to work is kind of diplomatically and kind of to tread lightly in things. Like, for example, in the Medjugorje, the 30-year ongoing Medjugorje apparitional event in Yugoslavia, Cardinal Schönborn, who's a very influential Austrian cardinal, he didn't come out so much and to say that, you know, I approve this apparition. But what he did do is he visited the site. So in kind of a backdoor way, it was kind of adding his prestige and acceptance to this apparitional event. And what I'm saying is, in Balducci's efforts, I think he was absolutely, without question, operating for Rome. He didn't just go over to, you know, leave Italy and come on over and visit UFO conferences because he just was a big tourist. He was doing it with some professional interest in mind, and in an indirect way, yes, he was lending a show of Vatican influence and interest in the phenomena, yes. And I think these recent statements they've come out with, like by the director of the Vatican Observatory, et cetera, and like you're saying that the space people would be our brothers, the statements are made like that. I think that's a kind of a diplomatic way of, yes, showing their hand that they do know something and they do believe that the obvious, that we are being visited by extraterrestrials and extraterrestrials exist. You wouldn't be a thinking person, frankly, in my mind, if you didn't believe that.
Did you have to get your book approved by the church prior to publication?
No, and the reason I didn't was because it's not a textbook as such. I did ask the bishop for an imprimatur, but I was basically told that it's not necessary because it's not a text per se. It could be used as a text, but it's not like I'm writing to college students. And in other words, I have leeway to that extent. Now, it has been reviewed by Catholics and clerics and and well reviewed, but no, I didn't have to get actual church approval. No. No, I didn't.
So, for those of us who are not Catholic, and I'm not,
yeah,
I'm not religious, but for those of us who are not Catholic, in whatever category of not Catholic we happen to be,
yeah,
how much freedom of thought are you allowed in such matters?
Well, quite a bit. Because actually, believe it or not, see, I've been on a lot of Catholic radio, national Catholic radio, too. And some of them are a little cautious about having apparitional stress themselves. Like we said a minute ago, it isn't absolutely required to believe in apparitions of the Virgin Mary to be a Catholic. I mean, there's some that are just not interested in it, pro or con. So there's a lot of that. But so there's a lot of freedom. I mean, you have freedom to just not even, you know, just be disinterested in the topic, or like me, fascinated with the topic. So you have a lot of leeway, yes.
Are you familiar with the Billy Meyer case?
I am. I am, to a certain extent. I've heard a lot of stories about Billy Meyer.
Okay. Now, in that case, he has had, at least his story is that he has had meetings with extraterrestrials.
Right.
And they have given him messages, and he has written these messages down.
Right.
And like the information that was given to the children at Fatima, that came true, a great many of the things he's written down have come to pass. And where he's written them down, and it was published years before it happened.
Right.
Is it possible, and see, I don't even know if Billy Meyer is Catholic, Protestant, atheist, or something in between. I don't know. But is it possible that whatever, either God or the universal consciousness or whatever people think, however they term it, chooses to send messages to people here on Earth in forms that they will accept. And with Catholics and Orthodox, they certainly will accept an apparition of Mary with someone else, a Pleiadian, or I think he calls him Pleiarans. Is that a possibility?
Kevin, I can't say it's not. I mean, my knowledge is, I have more knowledge than most, and that I've been interested in UFOs, you know, different things all my life, but, and I'm, of course, religious, an unusual combination perhaps, but not really. I mean, if the Vatican's interested in UFOs, why shouldn't I be? But what I'm saying is, there's limits to my knowledge, like most humans, and I will say this, in Genesis chapter 6, it speaks of watchers, and now it's unclear whether these were aliens or spiritual entities. I tend to believe they were aliens, and the watchers are clearly mentioned in Genesis chapter 6, so who are these people? What was their function? I mean, did they have some tutorial aspect with humanity? I can't really say. I do know this. It's said in the Bible, Jesus is speaking to his disciples. He says, "In my Father's house are many mansions, and I go to prepare a place for you." But what that also means, if there's already existing many mansions, which I read as dimensions, then I can't say the complexity that's there. He may be using aliens in some form or fashion as intermediaries. I don't know. I don't know. But I'm open to the fact that things are probably a lot more complex than we think they are.
I have a flash message from Costa Rica from Nick. I believe that's right. Let me check. That's correct. And it says, "Kevin, go to eseti.org, which is James Gilliland's website.
Right.
During his conference at the ranch in Trout Lake, Washington, last July, a photo was taken of the Virgin Mary."
He sent me that photo.
It is quite clear. And that's from Nick in Costa Rica. Nick, thank you for that flash message. And Kevin, you say you have that photo?
Yes, James Gilliland sent me that photo.
And is it quite clear that it's...
Pretty clear, yeah, it's pretty clear.
How do you know it's the Virgin Mary?
It looks like the representation of what has historically been associated with her, and that would come from physical descriptions from apparitions.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way I'd know. And now, most of these apparitions, you've got to understand, most of them she identifies herself as such. I mean, you say, well, maybe we're mistaken alien for her. No, she tells you exactly, for the most part, who she is. But what I'm saying is the classical representation of her would be a woman perhaps 5 foot five, fairly attractive, somewhat dark complexion, usually wearing a white gown with a blue sash. And that's been the reported phenomenon over and over and over again. So that's why that picture that Gilvin sent me and has been normally associated with her is being recognized as such.
Okay, let me ask you this.
All right.
A whole lot of folks all around the world are very taken with the idea that we are living in the last times.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
So let's keep that in the back of our minds, and let me ask you, have the number and frequency of these apparitions increased over the past few years?
Well, now see, that's the thing. Remember when I said that the chart in the back of the book had hundreds and hundreds that have happened in the last 100 years?
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is just subjective, Kevin. I mean, I said I thought that frequency had probably been occurring right throughout. Mm-hmm. I can't say that with certainty. That's just a guess on my part. Now, she has had apocalyptic warnings in recent years. More so than in others, and there's a seer right now is currently around and noted. His name is Pedro Regis, R-E-G-I-S. He's a Brazilian seer who's been having apparitional events, and the local bishop in Brazil tends to give credence to his apparitions as being valid. And he predicted the Gulf oil disaster, the earthquake in Haiti. And there's also been some apocalyptic predictions relative to, like, a Nibiru kind of experience.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I can't swear with absolute certainty this guy's on the level, but preliminarily he seems to be pretty accurate. And like I say, the local bishop, who's more familiar with his circumstances than I am, seems to see him as a credible person. So, yes, it's possible we may be living in the end times, yes.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hi, Brent. Hey, Brent.
Kevin, I have a question.
Yeah, Brent, we're just about to be caught by a break. You want to hang on through this break?
Yeah, sure.
All right, you hang in there. Well, folks, as we trot off for a couple of minutes of break, you got a lot to think about, right? I mean, if the phenomena is real, we don't want to discount it simply because it has religious overtones. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. On the line with me, my guest, Kevin Cook, and Brent in Wyoming. Brent, we had to cut you off just as you got online, so please go ahead.
All right. Now, Kevin, I'm going to ask you a question, but I want you to hear me out before you answer it. How clear are these pictures of Mary?
Well, experiencing audio, stand by. I don't know if that fixed it, Brent. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
We cannot hear Brent. We cannot hear Kevin. Can you hear me? And we cannot hear Kevin. Can you hear me, Kevin?
I can hear you.
I don't know what happened with Brent's phone.
I don't know.
Lots of static.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't, but, you know, actually, I don't know if they're having the blizzards and snowstorms and ice storms and stuff in Wyoming. But a whole lot of the country is having that, and that maybe that was it. Maybe so.
But some of the pictures have been pretty clear, Mary. Like I say, they're not as clear as like an NFL football game, a guy catching a pass. But, I mean, for what they were, I'd say they're pretty clear.
What this picture that was taken at James Gilliland's conference, did he tell you anything about it?
He didn't really. He sent it to me for... to include in my research, haven't contacted him relative to it. Basically, there were just functions going on at the ranch, and this was taken by his gardener. And it is a very distinct picture of Mary. Beyond that, I can't really. I could send it to you if you like. If you'd like to see it.
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to see it. Was the apparition high in the sky, low to the ground? Where was it?
I really don't know. I mean, I really couldn't tell. It was a pretty straight up frontal picture of Mary. I can't. I mean, I didn't. Like I said, I didn't follow up with Gilliland as far as the statistics about where, what, and how. But it was a very distinct picture. Yes. And it looked more on floor level than it would be like up in the sky or something like that, perspective-wise.
Yeah, I really would love to see it.
I should still have it in my email, and I'll forward it to you sometime next week when I get to the computer.
Okay. I want to say to the audience, I do apologize for the technical things that we've been experiencing this evening. I don't know how much of that is. I do know on the television channel that it's a problem with the software. That has nothing to do with the audio. The stuff with the audio, I don't know if that's our stuff or if it's weather related out there down the line somewhere. I don't know. All right, let me ask you this now. Kevin, have you ever had the experience of an apparition of Mary?
No, I haven't. The closest I've come in those kind of exotic experiences was the odor of sanctity, which is exotic enough, but I have not actually experienced Mary herself, no.
Why is it important to you to document that this is a real phenomenon?
Well, I think because... I think really it shows that God cares about us. I mean, we're bombarded with everything else in the world, and this is, I think, an absolute extension of the divine out to us, and we'd ignore it, yet we chase every ghost that ever inhabited any attic in the country. I mean, and this is what I'm saying is, as far as phenomena go, this is so obviously credible, and yet people dismiss it out of hand. I mean, to me, it's frustrating.
Why do you think people dismiss it?
And to me, it just is frustrating. People would rather believe it's aliens. They'd rather believe it was a bartender in a Halloween costume.
Why do you think people...
It's crazy.
All right. Why do you think people dismiss it?
Because they don't want to believe in God. They find it more comfortable to believe in aliens or ghosts or...
Yeah, but now wait a minute. That's not exactly true because, let me rephrase that. It's not exactly accurate because there are a great many people who are Christians that do not believe, even among Catholics, in the apparitions of Mary.
Well, okay. Well, here along those same lines, what I'm saying is when I was a Protestant, and I'm not knocking all Protestants, they don't all believe that way, but frequently Protestants want to make religion into being like a intellectual exercise and very philosophical. But what I'm trying to say, and from my experience and viewpoint, is there are demons, there are angels, there is God, there's evil in the world. I mean, all these things, it's a real world out there. It's not some intellectual exercise. I mean, you know, if you read the Bible and miracles happened, the devils were cast out, all this, are we supposed to think that these things don't happen now? And when I find evidence of such, I think it's important people grasp the reality of the prayers they're saying and what they're experiencing. It isn't just a dry intellectual exercise like an American history class.
Well, we're almost out of time. But look, what about folks who they believe in God, they are religious,
yeah.
Maybe they're Catholic, maybe they're not, but they don't believe in the apparitions of Mary, and yet... Do think that extraterrestrials are real?
Yeah.
So you know, it's not a dried up intellectual experience. They think
extraterrestrials are real. I don't have any problem with that, and obviously the Vatican doesn't either. But I'm just saying this phenomenon seems to be a valid one, and it's a very pleasant thing, and I think God's extending himself to you. I hope people buy the book. They can come to my website and buy it, or buy it at Barnes & Noble, and I think if they give it a fair read, they'll see that it's very valid.
Well, I'm sure they will. I'm just curious, though, about folks who are religious, don't buy the idea of apparitions of Mary, and yet, certainly don't have an intellectual approach to their religion, but have an experiential approach to it. And yet, they dismiss this phenomena, and I'm just curious as to why.
Because I think mostly they haven't been exposed to how widespread it is or how well authenticated it is. You can dismiss a phenomenon, but if you don't have the facts, well, you're not being intellectually honest.
Do you think it's important, this thing about the phenomena of the apparitions of Mary, do you think it's important for people who are not Catholic? Do you think it's important for people who are not religious?
I think it deserves some inquiry, yes.
Why so?
Well, because, I mean, we inquire into everything else. If God's actually going to the effort to send people as messengers and warn us and this and that and the other, I think it would behoove us to pay attention.
Well, fair enough answer. All right, stay on the line with me for just a moment as I bring the show to a close. Ladies and gentlemen, it's just about time to bring this flight of the Kevin Smith Show in for a landing. We have looked at a phenomena tonight that does fall quite definitely within the realm of the paranormal, but a phenomena that we've never looked at before on this show. If it is well documented, as our guest tells us it is, and if it is happening, then I think it certainly is something that we need to think about. It's something we need to investigate, something we need to come to terms with. You know me, I don't believe in throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Just because I am not a religious person, that doesn't mean that I think we ought to dismiss a phenomena that many people say exists and they have experienced. My friends call me Steel Eye, my enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.